my co-host and co-trustee for the Natural Solutions Foundation is Ralph Fusitola. Ralph, are you there?
Yes, indeed I am, Dr. Rima.
I am so glad to hear that. Welcome, welcome. We had a little bit of a glitch. Our guest, Vinnie Eastwood, host of The Lighter Side of Genocide, is on the other side of the world. He is in New Zealand. I am in Chile. And Ralph, you're in New Jersey. So we have a a three-point touchdown, so to speak. What we usually do, folks, is we spend the first few minutes of the show talking about the health freedom news of the week. And there's been some very interesting stuff developing. Ralph, talk to us about the health freedom news of the week.
Oh, my. There's been various things developing. Of course, here in the United States, we are all being worked over and worked up over who's going to pay for health care and what and who's going to control health care. To those of us who seek advanced health care, the type of work that Dr. Rima does, we know that the new national health care system is not really going to be friendly to what we're looking for in health care. So I've been watching the debate and the battle from the sidelines, never expecting that the type of health care that's being planned for us will actually be real health care. The battle continues, especially in the area of vaccines, with various vaccine pushers in the medical community making a lot of noise in the past few days. In fact, Dr. Rima is working on two responses to two of the very well remunerated physicians who are vaccine drug pushers, and showing the mistakes they're making, the factual errors, the lack of real science behind the vaccine lie. So that's been a major thing popping in the past week. And certainly people are concerned about Fukushima. They're very concerned about the healthcare, the health effects of that continuing disaster, and they're concerned about GMOs. Just again, a couple of weeks ago, there were another series of worldwide demonstrations against the GMOs. And in the middle of all of that, Natural Solutions Foundation, Dr. Rima and her extraordinary staff in Chile, were honored by Salsa Labs, Democracy in Action, one of the organizations, that helps NGOs like ours communicate. By naming us one of their 2013 honorees for the work we've done in Chile, especially. And in fact, in the particular category that we were awarded, we beat out the Organic Consumers Association, one of the certainly other big players in the health and food freedom world. We love the Organic Consumers Association, but we're happy to beat them in an honor such as that. So,
it's funny because we didn't know that we had been nominated for this award. Mm-hmm. The award is based on the fact, and it's not just what we did here in Chile, it's also what we did around the rest of the world. And by the way, I believe that I can probably change my Skype settings so that I'm not getting these annoying noises. Let me do that. Mute all sounds. That should help. Okay.
It's all Vinnie Eastwood's fault, by the way.
I'm sure. It's all Vinnie Eastwood's fault. It's always Vinnie Eastwood's
fault. Aha. Uh-huh.
You know, when anything goes wrong, it is always Vinnie Eastwood's fault. And that's Vinnie.
I was thinking about renaming my show Vinnie Eastwood's Fault. And we could talk and we could talk about my many faults on a daily basis.
Well, as a matter of fact, I think the entire world should be talking about your faults, Vinnie. Yeah.
We are.
Absolutely. Well, actually, the reason why they're talking about my faults actually is my fault, because I made it happen.
It sounds very new agey. Let me finish talking about what's our fault in the world of GMOs, Vinny, because I know that this is a world that's very important to you too. Here in Chile, the extension of Chile from UPAV 91, which allows people to save seeds and which honors the traditional relationship of indigenous people and farmers to seed, is supposed to be replaced by UPAV 91, which does no such thing and which is responsible for the total destruction of family farming and small farming in the United States, and is an international treaty which, once acceded to, can never be untreated unless a country leaves the World Health, leaves the World Trade Organization and so on. It's a one-way street, and it's a one-way street to the centralization and total control of the food system and total industrialization of the food system, and the United States is the perfect model for that. So
that's what's known as being that's what's known as being treated badly.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. So we decided that we were not going to sit idly by and watch Chile go down that road, since we have come here specifically to create a low radiation organic food supply for the Northern Hemisphere to counter the Fukushima disaster, which we'll talk about in a bit. So we created Chile's first ever action item, and we created a situation where, through social media, 2.5 million emails were sent to the Chilean Senate and other decision makers, the Minister of Agriculture, and so on. And it kept the UPAV law from being passed, and it will now be taken up again after the election, which is a huge triumph for us because it was a total shoo-in. Well, the people, the good people at Salsa Labs, who run the program that we use to do these action items, that's where you click submit, and your letter goes to our targets. The good people at Salsa Labs noted this, and they gave us, they awarded us the Hell No, We Won't Go annual award. Why Hell No, We Won't Go? If you're old enough, and you, Vinny, are not, to remember that you, Vinny, are a mere babe. But
I'm younger than I look.
I know. Ralph and I were very much aware of the Vietnam War protests.
I was at the raising of the Pentagon in 1967.
I was at the Justice Department riot, and I was gassed, and so on. Very interesting. So we were part of a generation which was saying, hell no, we won't go fight in Vietnam. And it was very powerful, and we literally brought a war machine of the largest, most aggressive nation in the world to its knees. We stopped the war through our protests and our actions and our public pressure. So
yeah,
hell no.
It only took 12 years.
It only took 12 years, but hey, we were a ragtag, disorganized bunch of people, and we didn't have the internet. Now we would do better.
Now it's the internet, and the American government has been on nonstop war for the past 12 years, at least.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't see Iraq ending anytime soon, even though we've got the power. Yeah.
Nor Afghanistan, nor Somalia. No, no. Eternal war is the peace of the
world. Eternal peace.
Exactly. So
the thing is, maybe we take credit for victories that we're gonna end anyway because the elite wish it to end, so that we'll become passive.
We've had several victories.
and feel like we've accomplished everything we want to, and then we just give up feeling like the victors, and then we get everything turned against us while we look the other way.
But Vinny, they keep supplying us with more things that we have to fight. For instance, there was a real victory in Mexico this week because Mexico had an honest judge who said, I will not permit the planting of the GMO corn that Monsanto has been planning here, and you must stop using all genetically modified materials here for corn. And of course, corn is a national treasure in Mexico, where unfortunately all of the corn is now contaminated, but at least they finally stopped it. Now, it's not perfect, but it means that Mexico can try to recoup, if they have seed stock, they can try to recoup their national treasure in the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of varieties of maize or corn. That's a huge victory. Another victory is that the FDA finally, after 30 years of denying that it was the case, finally agreed to stop allowing arsenic to be put in not only chicken feed, but animal feed in general. Why would they put arsenic in animal feed? Because the animals swell up, so they come to market weight a few days sooner, which means profits for the animal producers on the factory farms. And of course, it also means that you're eating arsenic. Yes! And the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, finally had to acknowledge that they had been secretly permitting it and finally agreed that they would now prohibit it. Whether they'll do it or not is another problem. But my God, think about how long that's taken. I first discovered that there was arsenic in animal feed when I had an environmental scientist who had a mysterious illness and nobody could diagnose it. Eventually I did. She had arsenic poisoning, chronic arsenic poisoning. And I said, do you work with arsenic? No. Have you been exposed to arsenic in your field studies? No. No, 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 no. And I said, well, tell me about your diet. And she said her principal animal protein was chicken. And I said, bring me some chicken. And we tested it. And there it was, just loaded, dripping, you might say, with arsenic. And that was how I discovered that chicken and other animals were being laced with arsenic in the United States, where people think they have the best food supply in the world. Very
interesting. You were not drinking enough fluoridated water, or else you would have not bothered to probe deep enough to find the arsenic.
I think that's probably the case. I would say that I am not drinking enough fluoridated water. But, you know, folks, Ralph and I know who this person with the funny accent is on the other end of the phone, on the other end of the Dr. Rima Truth Reports. I think I should introduce you. My guest with a funny accent, our guest with a funny accent, is Vinnie Eastwood, the most amazing and fabulous, larger than life, Slayer of Suffering. I said, how do you want to be introduced, Vinny? So he sent this to me. Slayer of Suffering and Strife, large and in charge. He's more like Homer, but not Marge. The French say women are from Venus, men are from fromage. Some are a son of the land and others a son of the sea. Vinny likes to expose those whom are a son of a beach. That kind of gives you a taste of Vinny, whose radio show, the only one of its kind in the world, but certainly the only voice of this type of truth in New Zealand, is called The Lighter Side of Genocide. And I have had the privilege of speaking with Vinny on his show and enjoying him and playing with him. He's enormously well-informed, and he somehow manages to keep a balance that might provide the possibility of sanity if he does everything just exactly right. Welcome to the Dr. Rima Truth Reports, Vinny.
Well, thank you. Well, in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you go freaking nuts.
This is absolutely true. Tell us how it is that you manage to keep your sense of humor in a world so full of chaos and madness.
Well, as Bruce Willis famously said, it's not a choice, it's a lack of options.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, what choice do you got? Okay, all right. I mean, let's just put the little deal in your hand down in front of you. So on the one hand, all right, listen up. You have major depression, very, very, very closely assuming the role of completely insane and paranoid, and losing touch on reality itself, having no contact with your friends or family, being in poverty, and not feeling too good about yourself in general. On the other hand...
Sounds good, Vinny. And then you get to take all kinds of drugs.
And on the other hand, you can also take all kinds of drugs, but instead of feeling depressed about it, you actually quite enjoy yourself.
And for me, I have to add... You get to do something about it. You get to fix the problems. And that's a big sanity inducer, to be active. You know, learned helplessness is a great way to destroy a laboratory animal or a human being. We don't do very well with learned helplessness.
No, because the only one who can help you with all of your problems is the one going through all of those problems. Unfortunately, that person is you. And when you're responsible for a human life, whether it's your child or anything else, that responsibility is all encompassing. At all hours of the day, you're going to be watching, making sure you're responsible so that you don't get your legs stuck in some kind of bad step, get your trachea ripped out by some form of knife wielding mugger in the street, you know? There's certain things and very good reasons why you take care of yourself, which is why when people donate to me, I ask them, only donate to me if you're already fed your family and paid all your rent and fully taken care of yourself, mate. Because if you can't take care of yourself, how are you going to help anybody else?
Have you ever had people say, I want to donate to you and I can't afford to feed myself?
Pardon?
I never had people say, I want to donate to you, but I can't afford to feed myself.
Yes, I have. And then I said, well, that's a simple option then. You can't feed yourself and you can't donate to me. So, don't feel guilty.
Vinny, what are the things that you focused on in your radio show? What are your themes of greatest significance?
Well, a friend of mine in university once accused me of saying, Vinny, you try to force good conversation on people and it doesn't work. I found out a way to make it work. So what you do is you get anybody who has a good speaking reputation, enough to be recommended by listeners to have on the show. That's how most of the guest list gets filled up. The listeners recommend somebody, and I get that somebody on to hear what they've got to say. And I force a good conversation to happen. We have fun. We talk about really serious issues. We have a few laughs. We express some really interesting thoughts and ideas. Just like two interesting, intelligent people come into a cafe just to hang out for a couple of hours, except everybody else gets to listen in on this incredible information, amazing ideas, and deep insight, at the same time as having fun and having a few laughs. Because at the end of the day, these subjects of which we discuss are often very brutal, savage, very disturbing in nature, that if you were to be serious the entirety of the time, you would not be capable of remembering the good in humanity, and you might lose faith in it. You might even stop wanting to fight against it. The goal of my show has nothing to do with trying to wake people up. I could care less, as far as I know. You cannot wake somebody up. Nobody forced me at gunpoint to watch two documentaries a day for six straight months to have a geometric change in my thinking processes. Nobody forced me to do that. I woke myself up. You can only lead somebody to the door. They're the one that has to walk through it. What I'm interested in is helping all of those people who have already walked through the door and are now standing in the darkness knowing that everything they previously held to believe was a lie. And I try to make them laugh and make them realize that, hey, it's just the end of the world. There's no need to get upset about it.
Well, you know, we should talk about Fukushima.
We should. Let's talk about the factual side of Fukushima in New Zealand. What is the radiation picture like there?
I am not the person to ask, but one of my good friends, Jonathan Eisen, who does Uncensored magazine at uncensored.co.nz, he sells a few things here or there, like little bits and bobs, items, DVDs, magazines and whatnot. And one item that he's selling out almost every single time he gets a new stock is Geiger counters. Apparently, they're flying off the shelves quicker than cotton candy at an enormously obese American carnival fair in the country somewhere. It's unbelievable. People are really, really concerned, I would say. And I don't eat the fish. No frickin' way, mate. No way. I'm not eating nothing coming out of the sea. It was a real shame because, you know, seafood was what was, you know, pretty good for me as far as
right.
I
know. It used
in
to
some
be.
Way. Yeah. But now it's simply a radioactive time bomb waiting to go off for about 6,000 generations in my gullet.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. Is there much discussion in New Zealand about these realities?
Zero.
Zero. They're buying high counters, but they have duct tape over their mouths?
This is the unfortunate business. The alternative media in New Zealand, we've got a relatively active blogosphere, a very, very minor radio sphere for alternative, and also a even more drastically reduced video element. So the alternative media in New Zealand is not very strong. There's not an awful lot of choice, but there are a few people who are publishing things about Fukushima radiation, I'm sure, including John Eisen from Uncensored magazine and his wife, Catherine Smith, who publishes the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, who also published a long list of herbs, spices, and other bits and bobs that you can get to indeed cleanse radiation out of the body. So,
the real answer for them. Let me tell you.
Can you send me that list, Vinny? Because I've already, I have a site that people may or may not know about. I don't have it. The Natural Solutions Foundation has it. It's called tinyurl.com/radprotect, R-A-D, protect. And on it, we talk about some spices, and we talk about denatured whey protein, which even people with milk sensitivity can eat. And we talk about boron and so on. But if there are some, and miso soup, if there are some other items that this gal has listed, I would love to know about it and share it with our folks. Can you do that?
Yes, I'm here. Sorry, I was just grabbing the magazine that this list of herbs and everything is, so I could actually read them out to you, because I thought it was really quite interesting and aptly timed. This is a rather old issue of Uncensored that I'm just flicking through to try and find the article now. But we have this Fukushima equals radiation of 2,000 atomic bombs, the dreaded all-out nuclear war that would happen if Russia or the United States actually pressed the button, is going on right now. That's by Bob Nichols.
It finally happened.
Well, that was written on April 22nd, 2011. We are living in almost like a post-apocalyptic Fukushima wasteland, and that's why when I introduce my show, I often say, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated and Fukushima-irradiated island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, where there's so much radiation that everybody has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. Now, radiation detox, I think I've found the article I was looking for. There's zeolites, iodine, glutathione and super greens, sodium carbonate, that's baking soda, minerals, clay, ginkgo, biloba, echinacea, panax ginseng, curcumin, orientin, vicennin, osimum sanctum, that's basil, Vicennian flavonoid, what the hell that is, sounds like some kind of an alien thing, but there's vitamin C, selenium, melatonin, alpha lipoic acid, what was it? There was also garlic, ginger, turmeric, zinc, rosemary, resveratrol, and also just basically having a general diet so that you avoid eating radioactive things. And these are so many things that you can put into your cooking just in general. So if you control your diet rather specifically and you know where your food comes from, you can avoid the bulk of the radiation saturation in the first place, and you can also put in elements that will indeed help to detox the residual radiation in the atmosphere and the water and everything like that from your body anyway. So this will ensure you a long, hopefully cancer-free life. But, you know, there are no freaking guarantees with levels like this.
Oh, there are certainly no guarantees. And if those spices have been irradiated, there's not much that's going to help you out of them. It's very important to get organic spices if you're going to help yourself with this strategy. Organic spices and non-GMO organic nutrients. Because otherwise, you're just making the problem worse. You're putting toxic, devitalized crap into your body.
What I'm hearing here is the value of the antioxidants, and I'm also hearing here from Dr. Rima, essentially, that radiation is one of those assaults on our immune system that creates the genome disruption syndrome that she's told us about, and certainly we're seeing the disruption growing worse and worse. The reports coming in on Fukushima, Dr. Rima and I just both were looking at a report earlier today of 28 factors that should keep people up at night worrying, you know. And in fact, while we're talking on the show, let me see if I can find those 28 factors.
These are 28.
Well, if you're worrying, I find it ironic to be worrying about getting sick, because when you're worrying, you're stressed, and stress causes 90% of all illnesses. So it's not exactly a chicken or egg thing. It's pretty cause and effect, I think.
Well, but there's another piece there. If you don't pay attention to the reality and protect yourself and the people that you love, you are guaranteeing that you are making yourself vulnerable and you will not be able to protect yourself. So there is something very, very important to be said for being alert and being confident that you have the resources available to you, starting with the intellectual resources like the list that you just read off, Vinnie, to actually solve the problem. One of the problems is we're being irradiated. We're being baked and fried and broiled and microwaved by Fukushima, one of the stupidest construction projects in the history of mankind. And we have to do something about it, or we just have to throw up our hands and say, screw it, I'm helpless. Well, I can't do that, because I don't believe that we are. I believe that we have the power to do what we need to do.
If you thought Fukushima was a stupid construction process, you should have seen my dad's shed.
But I don't think your dad's shed had the capacity to kill the entire population of the Northern Hemisphere, did he?
That I can neither confirm nor deny.
Vinny, what information do you have about whether Fukushima was an intentionally created disaster or just gross stupidity and neglect of safety and logic coming together with the weather.
The day Fukushima happened, Benjamin Fulford called me from Tokyo in the morning about maybe 12 minutes before my show. And he was on the phone with a lot of different people, picking it up right in the middle of the broadcast. You know, and it was quite interesting to me because not a couple of weeks earlier, there was indeed a call with Benjamin. He was saying that the Japanese government was being threatened by the US government. They were apparently threatening to use an earthquake weapon on them to create a tsunami or something of that nature, because they wanted the Japanese to pay them, I think, like $1 billion in, of debt or something like that, and they wouldn't do it, they couldn't afford it or something. And they refused, and then the very next day, it hit or something, right? This is a couple of years ago that I was remembering, just kind of fuzzing back to that memory. And just so you remember all that footage of all those massive waves and everything coming up all over the place. You see entire towns being washed away, cars just floating in the water like marshmallows in a hot cup of cocoa. It was just scary how little effect any of the tsunami protection concrete structures and everything had. It was nothing. It was as if the entire sea itself raised up several feet and was just in the process of trading places with the land, much like you would let the you would get out of the bathtub too quick and an entire wall of water flows over the entirety of the bath and just spills out over the other end. It was like that.
Absolutely. Fulford published, and I must admit, I do not know Fulford, but if you can put us in touch so we can be in direct contact with him, I'd really love that, Benny. when Fulford published his information that Japan had been warned that if they did not back out of the BRICS alliance, the Brazil, Russia, India, China alliance, then Fukushima would be destroyed by an earthquake weapon. I thought, well, that's interesting data. Then when the people who watch the electronic emissions and the waveforms that HAARP puts out when it's turned on and when it's ramped up, when they published their documentation, basically supersized oscilloscopes showing that the HAARP was the HAARP gear in Alaska, Fort Greely, Alaska, had been ramped up to the highest level that anyone had ever seen it, and that it had been putting out 1.4 cycle per second energy at 1.5 billion kilowatts, beaming it up into the ionosphere and bouncing it down precisely to the epicenter of the earthquake, just as they had in Guangdong, where they pulverized the mountain that suddenly fell to dust. Mountains don't usually fall to dust, and certainly a mountain that has within it the entire 100% of the arsenal of China's forward nuclear weapons doesn't usually fall to dust. But that was a Project Bluebeam success, I suppose you could say. And it would appear very, very compellingly to me that Fukushima was another Project Bluebeam success, given the fact that the U.S. government was involved in building Fukushima, and they knew that the seawall was only 6 feet high, and yet the average of the once-in-a-thousand-year tsunamis was over 100 feet high. And so they created over 100 feet high, and they knew that the the backup generators that could keep the fuel rods and reactors cool were at sea level. They knew that they would be swamped. This was quite well planned out. And they also knew that Japan's secret and illegal and unconstitutional nuclear weapons program was housed beneath Building 4, Nuclear Reactor 4. So they knew exactly what they were doing because they had built, the U.S. government had built Japan's unconstitutional, illegal, secret nuclear weapons program for them. So Fulford
on top
and,
of David Icke also reported, or maybe re-reported, that there were a new security camera system being installed at Fukushima that was made by an Israeli nuclear weapons company or something like that,
yes,
or connected
yes,
to the like.
Indeed.
Now, one of the points that David Icke made, what I think is quite interesting and poignant and quite funny at the same time, you're in Japan, right? Okay? You think about a cell phone that's gone from a brick to a thumbtack practically overnight. And the security cameras that they bring in are like 10 foot tall, bulky as frag, weighing like 1,000 pounds each. Doesn't make any sense, does it? What interesting is that the weight of them almost matches identically the weight of a nuclear warhead. So if you're worried about your nuclear facility going up in smoke, it's quite simple. Don't buy nuclear warhead cameras from the Israelis.
Well, there's also the issue of the virus. Apparently, while the security cameras were being installed and software interface was being installed, apparently a very interesting virus was installed that allowed the complete and total shutdown of all the security and safety systems of Fukushima through this specific and very sophisticated software alteration. This virus has originated, or this intentional computer glitch, which is introduced, was apparently created by the Mossad for the purpose of shutting down any reactor that they didn't really like, for instance, the one in Iran. So this is interesting. They put in new cameras, and they, of course, had to interface with the computer software of the old cameras and the old security system. Fox, Hen House, something like that, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I find it interesting that they call the organization Mossad, because it's actually kind of truthful. Because whenever they go out and do something, it doesn't make people more happy. It makes them more sad.
Oh, sad. I don't think it works in Hebrew, but it's very funny. So there is really not a lot of discussion about this, eh?
Not a lot at all. I mean, it's been virtual media blackout since day one about the Fukushima thing, isn't it? You know, you get one story here or there or whatever that's like really, really, really played down, you know, with more euphemisms than you can shake a stick at, trying to make it sound not as bad as it really is, afraid that all the slaves will freak out and panic buy, and then 50 years later, after society's been completely destroyed for decades and whatever because they just went into a panic and didn't heal themselves because they trusted their leaders and what have you, who didn't tell them the frickin' truth. You would have wondered, you know, maybe we should just tell the truth all along and get everybody mature and well-informed and working on the problem together.
Oh, I think you're an enemy of the state. What do you mean, tell the truth all along? I mean, good heavens, haven't you been to corporate schools? Don't you know that the truth is not relevant?
Let's just say I'm incorrigible.
That's probably true. And here I thought you were New Zealander.
Yeah.
how many people came out of your school that you know of with the same incorrigible thirst for understanding and truth that you have, Vinny.
Including me?
Yeah.
None.
Uh-huh. Including you, none.
I didn't come out of school educated like this. I only got educated like this since I got away from it. You know, it's the thing. Education.
How'd that happen, Vinny?
Well, when you get busted for selling marijuana as a student, as you do, you wind up confessing absolutely every single one of your crimes and believing that the cops actually tell the truth. Then you figure out that actually they're not the kind of nice, friendly people who are actually out to help you and give you a fair deal and whatever. So they use everything that you confess to them against you. And then you see yourself getting 300 hours community service when the guy in front of you who was up for sexual assault and resisting arrest got 100. And then you wonder, is this entire system completely fracked? Why is it that none of these people that were actually my friends are actually still my friends? Well, how come they all just frickin' disappeared? How come the entire system really sucks? How come my life is falling apart? How come everything that I came to believe in my entire life actually turns out to be an absolute 100% complete BS lie? How come all the evil people that are committing scumbaggery and illegal wars all over the place and making shockingly large quantities of money and shipping drugs and everything like that, all the while supporting a war on drugs? How come? And then I started working as a telesalesman, and I started becoming really good at it, and I learned how to speak really well. And then I got frickin' demoted by a psychopathic scum who wanted to fire me and pay me 6 weeks' pay just to get the heck out of the building within 5 minutes because they didn't like the 7-page essay that I wrote about what was wrong with their company and how to fix it. And even after that, you still wind up working for psychopaths. There's a lot of psychopaths in sales. They're people who are dishonest, you know. When I was a salesman, I was honest. I tried to keep to my word, and I tried to help people, you know. If I couldn't help them, I didn't want to sell anything to them. But these other people had no scruples. They just wanted the money. They just wanted to do something. They had no means to an end. They didn't even have an end in mind. They didn't have anything that they wanted to do with their life. I was watching 2 documentaries a day. I was having my mind blown daily in many ways. I was learning something about the world that for once was finally true. And I realized that I couldn't do this anymore. I couldn't go to work for people that I hate doing stuff that I don't like. That doesn't actually improve the world in any way. So I took my job. I took my $11,900 bonus in shopping vouchers. I bought myself a computer and a camera. I started going out to protests. I started going out to public meetings and filming this all and putting it all on YouTube. I got invited on a radio show. I got a YouTube upgrade. I can upload unlimited files on there. I've got more subscribers than the New Zealand Herald, which is the New York Times of New Zealand, the most popular other mainstream media YouTube channel in New Zealand, and I'm beating the dance off them. I've been in the newspapers. I've been in the backgrounds of television shows, stealing the limelight. I'm exposing scumbaggery every single day. I've put up more activists on air than any other New Zealand media entity. In fact, all of them combined throughout the entirety of history. More activist opinions, more subject material, more online content than any entity in this country capable of producing. Done it by myself. Why? Because all of those people who know all this really important information, know what the frick they're talking about, have read the documents, know exactly what the problem is, and if you want to solve any of the problems, you best be well-versed with what exactly they are, and you best be able to listen for an hour or two so that they can explain fully in its form and function what we are dealing with here. And if you get those perspectives from so many different people, you get the most valuable thing that news is supposed to deliver. Perspective.
Vinny, you must have no friends.
I have nothing but friends and hardly any enemies.
Do you understand what I mean when I said that?
Maybe I didn't.
Okay. Obviously, we really treasure our connection with you, and we are very, very impressed by you and proud to be associated with you. As you talk to people, ordinary people who have not yet had the scales fall from their eyes, people who haven't watched the documentaries, decided that they have power over their lives, don't have to be slaves don't have to be dependent on the machine and the man. Those people find it very, very, very hard to hear the kinds of things that you talk about and that we talk about. And they get very easily isolated. They get defensive. They hide. They attack. They do strange things because they're feeling so uncomfortable with the disorientation and disconnect from their support systems, their comfortable chosen lies, if you will. And they tend to have a hard time with people like you, with people like us. So my question, because I am always mindful of how difficult it is for people to make this work for them emotionally when they're separating from the things that they've been taught are right and true and so on, and they see that they're lies. How do you maintain your relationships with people when you are in the midst of this continuing ongoing revelation and it's so passionately meaningful to you? Because once you wake up, you can't stay passive and you can't stay neutral.
Well, it's about picking your battles. And also, because you've changed doesn't mean they've changed. You used to get along with your parents and your brothers and sisters and so on and so forth before you started spouting all this stuff, didn't you? No. What did you used to do with them? Well, you used to go out to movies. You used to play bridge with them. You used to play go fish. You used to have a meal together and talk about your family and so on and so forth. There's nothing wrong or unwholesome with those activities. Continue to do those. Don't approach the subjects. Try not to force it on them, because you, by yourself, trying to convince somebody doesn't work. You need multiple people saying the similar thing that you're saying, but it can't all come from you, because your family are the hardest people to convince of anything. I say just enjoy their company and enjoy their time. Show them how absolutely 100% sane you are, and then eventually they start to click onto the fact that actually you're not crazy at all. In fact, you had it right along, and they were the one that was wrong. They were the one that was deceived.
This is very important. And one of the things you said, we were talking on your show, your New Zealand show, the Vinnie Eastwood show, not too long ago, and you made a very, I thought, cogent point. You said, choose to have people whom you can talk about this with so that you don't have nothing but pressure to talk about it with the people that you can't talk about it with. If you have a spouse or if you have family or friends or coworkers or whatever and they simply can't hear you, it's important to develop relationships with other people who can hear you so that you are not isolated alone and not constantly feeling the pressure to talk about this stuff with people who may just shut you down and turn away from you, and you probably don't want that. After all, human beings are designed to, like wolves, have a social pack. We do much better when we have a social connection with people. We are meant to be attached, not detached. It's the psychopaths who have no true attachment to anyone for any purpose, not a religion, not a community, not family, not chick, nor child, nor kith, nor kin. It's the psychopaths who are capable of unlimited destruction because nothing is connected to them and they are connected to no one. That's not how we're designed to be in life. And so I thought that was a very smart strategy for segmenting the relationships, those that you can talk your truth in and those that are still developing the ability to talk your truth in.
Mm. And then the next phase after that is knowing that you can talk your truth to even people who don't like and convince them so utterly of the truth that they can't even resist it, right? That's what I'm practicing, you know, kind of like a monk, kind of a truth monk.
How do you deal with this in your life?
Most of the great tools of dealing with negative situations are granted by the people that you're trying to convince of the negative situation. Denial and avoidance. So if you just deny that there's really, really, really stupid people out there who you can't convince and you can't save, and you avoid those people, then suddenly the bulk of your time is being spent with people who are worth your frickin' time.
Ralph, how do you deal with this?
Trying to laugh a bit, as we all are trying to do. This has been a very interesting program so far. In fact, we're almost halfway through the Dr. Reamer reports. It seems to just be flying by. How do I deal with it? With humor, with attention, and with intention. That's part of it.
I find it's connection. You know, you got to really have strong relationships with good people. Like all of my good friends, Count Dr. Reamer is one of them as well, are people that can do something way better than I can do it. So that means at all times I'm around somebody who is in fact a positive influence. All the people that I've ever had as my friends that are actually worse at everything that they do that I am are no longer my friends. Because they don't have anything to offer me or the world or anybody. They're simply parasitical, have no value, no creativity, and just leech off people, you know?
Interesting. Do you have people who want to treat you like a rock star, Vinny?
I do. And usually when they come up, I say, oh, would you like a hug? And they're like, yeah, I would love a hug. And I'm like, 6'4" and fuzzy. So I get really, really, really magical kind of like teddy bears hugs. And suddenly, when you realize that actually there's just a real person with good vibes, that rock star mentality comes across as something different, as somebody who actually wants to listen to you and care about you. Because something George Norrie told me when I interviewed him a year or two ago, I asked him, you know, how do you say so down to earth? I mean, have you ever heard George Norrie get into somebody on air or just talk smack or anything? No, never. He was always very grounded, always very, very approachable and very understanding and listening, you know, that kind of thing. And he says, well, you've got to talk to the people. Everywhere you go, you've got to talk and listen to people. Because if you tuck yourself away and you only talk with people of your own mindset, of your own clique, you never can be able to fully relate or stay true to yourself without the advent of other people's input in your life.
Do you realize that the show that we're having, the conversation that we're having, is really a field guide for staying sane as a social change agent?
Very interesting.
And it's a big issue. How do you keep, you know, I have done several studies. I'm a psychiatrist in my postgraduate training, and I became very, very interested with the personality characteristics of several groups of people, one of which was psychics. Now, psychics have access to information. It's a real phenomenon, by the way. There's no question in my mind that there is parapsychological information gathering. It's the kind of thing that General Burt turned into a trainable skill for military intelligence gathering decades before I met him when he created remote viewing. It's a real thing. And I became very interested by the fact that if you have information that cannot be verified most of the time, how do you determine whether something is real just because you think it's real, or is real because it's actually accessing, you are actually accessing otherwise unavailable information? What happens to people frequently who are psychic is that they lose track of when they're right and when they're wrong, and they come to believe rather predictably, that they're always right. And they're not always right. They're sometimes very wrong. One of the studies I did was I took a name and a birth date of somebody that I knew exceedingly well, and I gave that same name and birth date to a whole bunch of psychics. And then I coded everything that they said, every part of every communication, with either a 1, a 2, or a 1, a minus 1, or a 0. If it was true, I gave it a 1. If it was false, I gave it a minus 1. And if it was unknowable, I gave it a 0. For instance, if the psychic said, "Oh, it looks like we're going to break," I'll talk about that when we come back.
Thursday and Friday at 7 p.m. Eastern, you can catch the Mississippi Master of the Market, The Crow! That's right, be here for an exclusive evening wrap-up to all the market action. Join the Futures Guru himself for a live, in-depth look into the financial forecast. That's The Crow's Market Watch, every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, right here at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, where information never sleeps.
Amon Jordan and streaming globally across the World Wide Web, catch The Fetch every Saturday at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Intriguing interviews, live chat, lively discussion, and more. That's Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
This is Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot. I'm on Revolution Radio, Friday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific Time or 10 p.m. Eastern Time in Studio B. Listen live every Friday night. Whistleblower Radio, revealing the truth behind the matrix, one whistleblower at a time. Join me on Revolution Radio.
Do not know what hell looks like from the top.
Well, check it out every
Tuesday and Saturday on Revolution Radio. It's a double dose of the internationally recognized renegade military historian, Douglas Dietrich.
You'll stay right where you are till I tell you to move out.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesdays from 10 to midnight Eastern Time, join Douglas Dietrich as he exposes the truth in hidden history on his show Critical Omissions. And then our human weapon of mass destruction is back once again to take your calls on Saturday night firing lines. Both from 10 to 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Only on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
There is no denying the world is awakening. We see it in the global uprisings and demonstrations of the people around the planet and the new way of thinking and living that is arising naturally within each one of us and our communities. I have been a major player in this global shift and movement for over 20 years and have helped tens of thousands of people around the world change their lives and find their voice in order to help create the paradigm change we so desperately need. Join me here at Revolution Radio on the Just Bernard Show every Tuesday at noon Eastern Time for 2 hours of powerful interviews and discussion with some of the most influential visionaries of consciousness, alternative media, and suppressed knowledge. We promise to reveal the real matrix and empower your human experience.
Radio, freedomslips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to the Dr. Lima Truth Report. You're listening to the heartbeat of freedom and the drumbeat of truth. Our guest tonight is Vinnie Eastwood of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. That's V-I-N-N-Y. Vinny, why is the most important question. Now, Vinny is a truth-telling social justice advocate of freedom and personal responsibility from New Zealand, which is why he talks funny. He has a show called The Lighter Side of Genocide, and certainly genocide needs a lighter side to keep us sane. That's what we've been talking about. You're now listening to the second hour of our two-hour Dr. Rima Truth Reports. Ralph Fusatola, my co-host, as always, is here. And I'm going to ask Richard, our outstanding engineer, to put Vinny's URLs on our chat here at Revolution Radio. And by the way, Revolution Radio is an outstanding internet radio station with some extraordinary hosts and guests and shows that you will not want to miss. So, of course, we want you to listen to Studio B every Thursday night here at freedomslips.com from 10 o'clock Eastern to midnight. We want you to be with us, but we also want you to make sure that you listen to the other outstanding programs covering a wide range of topics and intellectual and political spectrums. It's a really interesting station. Meanwhile, we have something else interesting for you. You are listening to two of the three trustees of the Natural Solutions Foundation. That's Ralph Fusatola, J.D., and me, Rimi Ilebo, M.D. And we're about to tell you about coffee. We're probably the only health freedom organization in the world that has an eco-demonstration project that has a teaching farm where we grow coffee. And we grow it in a certified organic farm using outstanding techniques to teach the other farmers how to grow food without poisoning themselves, you, or the earth. That's why we have an eco-demonstration project in Panama. And the coffee that comes from the Valley of the Moon finca, finca means farm in Spanish, is beyond outstanding. It is simply extraordinary. It is magnificent. And we have a coffee special for you. That is, if you order 5 bags of coffee, we'll send you 6. We'll give you a gift of the 6th bag for free. All you have to do is make the donation of $25 per bag for 5 bags and pay the shipping and handling. So if you go to valleyofthemooncoffee.org or .com, valleyofthemooncoffee.com or .org, you can order your Christmas special. Why not give something that is wonderful and helps your health and freedom to the people you care about this holiday season? I don't care whether you celebrate Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Yuletide or whatever, whatever you celebrate, or nothing. Maybe you just celebrate the winter solstice. That's cool too. However, coffee is a high antioxidant food, and it is enormously healthful, has many health benefits if it doesn't have chemicals lacing it and poisoning you. Ours does not. The Valley of the Moon coffee tastes exactly like nature intended it to taste. It's a fermented food. Did you know that? Did you know coffee is twice fermented? It is a fermented food, which adds to its health benefits enormously. And there isn't much Valley of the Moon coffee. We have a 10 hectare, which is a 24.5 acre coffee growing area. And when the coffee is picked and roasted, it's gone for the year. And what a pity that is. So I urge you to help health freedom, help your own health, and help the people that you are giving your holiday gifts to. Half-pound bags fit in any stocking, and if they don't, give them in some other way. Put them under the tree, under the bed, under the pillow, whatever you're going to do. It's a wonderful gift, and it says, I care about the earth, I care about freedom, and I care about you. ValleyOfTheMoonCoffee.com is the place to go for the perfect gift. And while you're at it, order 5 bags, keep 1 for yourself. You will absolutely love this coffee, I promise you.
Thank you, Dr. Rena.
You're welcome.
I knew I would never be able to survive, especially doing as much radio as I do, without coffee.
Absolutely. We all thrive on coffee, but Ralph and I are drinking Valley of the Moon coffee, so we don't get the jitters and we don't get the coffee toxicity, which is really not from the caffeine. That's a misnomer, a misunderstanding. It's actually from the chemicals that are sprayed onto the coffee and which then are extracted by the hot water brewing process into your Java. So you're drinking Paraquat, you're drinking Roundup, you're drinking 2,4-D, which is a component of Agent Orange. You're drinking, all kinds of horrible things that literally poison your body when you're drinking coffee that isn't grown the way we grow Valley of the Moon coffee. It's clean and fresh and has no toxins, and therefore you'll be amazed. You can drink it. Most people can drink it right before bed. No coffee effect except the delight of it and the sense of well-being that a delicious brew gives you. So, valleyofthemooncoffee.com. Yes.
Now, to talk about what you were saying earlier about how I talk funny, you see, I always thought I was funny because of my sharp wit, and now I learned that it's just a speech impediment.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But I didn't want to tell you that quite so bluntly, because after all, we're on air, and I was sensitive to your feelings. But yes, you talk funny.
Yeah. well, maybe it helps, you know, because I think about the people that come from South Africa. I mean, they talk rather funny, and you can absolutely tell that there are some great jokes that they tell.
Yes, you have more experience with that accent than the people here in Chile. They talk funny too, but it's a total different language. Of course, we're not being serious.
Actually, I found out this very interesting prospect is that most people sound funny in their own accent if it's a very cliche of them kind of thing. Like, if they sound like a lot of people like that, that they represent so much of humanity that it's actually quite amusing, you know? If people talk in a very typical way, do you know kind of what I'm saying? Almost to the point of you are a walking contradiction in ridicule of yourself, and that makes your very existence quite amusing, because despite the fact that you have so much in common with everybody else, despite the fact that it's so difficult to differentiate you, you're actually still your own person in your own way, and you've made it work for yourself like a cosmic joke.
If you choose to be your own person. You know, there are people who choose to be as little their own person as they can manage, and that's tragic.
And it is certainly encouraged by fluoride, by a number of other aspects of our modern lives that lead us to become less and less of what we could have been if we hadn't been suppressed by chemistry, by what was the phraseology, Dr. Rima, that Bertrand Russell used?
In 1922, Bertrand Russell, speaking about how things should go. This was not said with regret. This was to encourage this to take place. He said, through diet, injunction, and injection, the average person will be, the ordinary person, sorry, will be unable to formulate an independent thought.
Of course, Lord Russell did not consider himself to be one of the ordinary people.
No, so certainly not.
Think. He would be allowed to think.
Yes, exactly. These people always take exemption for themselves because they're special. We're not. We are useless eaters. I was watching a documentary on elder abuse in the National Health Service.
Dr. Rima, are you there? I think we just lost Dr. Rima, or there we go.
I'm still here. I'm not.
Oh, Vinny, that's good. Well, she was just going to tell us about an experience with the National Health Service, which is not going to be a funny experience, I suspect. Although
although
various types of health services can always be humorous in a sort of a strange way. Now, Dr. Rima and another good friend of ours, nurse Nancy Weber, Nancy Orland Weber, actually a psychic detective, among other things, but also a nurse. It turns out we're both at the same psychiatric hospital in 1971-72 in New York State, and they were both being trained there. They knew each other under different names, actually, and it was the hospital that was the model for the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and they tell me it was exactly like that. And so art imitates reality, reality imitates art, and we are all, I guess, artists creating our own reality here. So
exactly, which is why there is absolutely no doubt there is no longer any creativity in Hollywood. Here's what. Two words.
Go ahead.
Rocky sex.
Monkey sex?
Rocky sex.
Oh, Rocky sex. Wait a minute.
Rocky, you know, with the Sylvester Stallone, you know, talk like this, you know, we had like Rocky VI, and then later on I even made another freaking sequel about it called Rocky Balboa. Oh my god.
All right.
There's no freaking creativity left in it, everything. Everything is all the exact same story, over repeated again and thrown in your face, all laced with subliminal images and symbols and metaphors and all of these different lines of Masonic symbolism and all of this kind of thing. It's an absolute dark dark period we are living in. This is not the golden age of television. No, 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 son. This is the dark age.
Golden age of philosophy either, I'm afraid.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was somewhat destructive to all our creativity to say the same thing. Back.
We've been having a great time talking about you while you were not here.
Really? And what did you say? It's probably all lies. What did you say?
No, you were about to tell a story about the National Health Service, and I said, well, they're probably not going to be very funny, but let me tell you about Dr. Rima and Nurse Nancy Orland Weber and the psychiatric hospital they worked in the 1970s. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, the nature of all that stuff, and you're back.
How it was like the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest model kind of thing, and we talked about how movies kind of tell the reality.
Oh, it was very much a One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest thing. It was an insane situation. It was in the first throes of the community mental health system being developed, certainly in New York, and the craziness that went on was beyond anything you could possibly imagine if you don't come from a totally dysfunctional, chaotic world. It was truly insane, and it's certainly the breeding ground for my huge contempt for medical psychiatry. And indeed for medical medicine, because I saw the excesses to which that system can be put close up and personal. And it's pretty horrifying, which was a confirmation for me of how important it was to practice drug-free medicine and psychiatry. And people say, well, don't you need drugs for anything? And my answer is, as a physician treating pretty much all comers, anything that walked through my door, crawled through my door, was pushed through my door, or rolled through my door on a gurney, if it was still breathing, I would treat, and usually successfully. It's much harder to treat people when they're already dead. It just is really so much worse. So,
well, there are a lot of people walking around now who are already dead, and in fact, the zombie apocalypse has become almost a symbol of North American reality. In the past couple of months, there have been several new zombie TV serials and a number of new zombie movies. Everyone in the media and on Facebook is talking zombies. There are cute photos of zombie kittens. I mean, it's...
So it's a meme. It's a cultural meme. And what does it say about us that our current meme is that we are dead but still animated? Would you say that there's some truth in that?
Maybe some Fukushima like truth. I don't know. But, you know, looking at it from the deep south as you are, or from off in the middle of the ocean as Vinny is, it probably is a different situation. It's probably
it's a lot better than my producer who moved back from New Zealand to California, is now 4 miles away from a nuclear reactor, just sitting there on the beach soaking up the rays.
Right, the rays coming from all directions.
here in Chile, one of our next campaigns, and I hope you guys are listening, you U.S. guys, you Chilean guys, and all the rest of you guys, one of our next campaigns, and we are dealing with the GMO issue right now, but one of our future campaigns that we're getting ready for right now is to make sure that Chile defaults on its pledge to build 2 nuclear reactors in Patagonia, the south of Chile. Patagonia is one of the most seismically active places on the planet. It's even more seismically active, they tell me, than Japan. So it probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense to build 2 major nuclear reactors, but we have been told a very interesting fact by a friend of ours who is the retired CEO of the second largest nuclear engineering company in the world. And he said, you realize, don't you, that nuclear plants don't make any economic sense in terms of generating electricity. As Albert Einstein said, it's a hell of a way to boil water. And we said, what do you mean? We were having dinner, as a matter of fact, with him. All three of the trustees were present for this conversation. He said, the only reason that nuclear power stations exist is to provide cover for the manufacture of weapons-grade nuclear materials.
Ooh.
Isn't that interesting? Now, think about the fact that immediately after Fukushima, and I do subscribe to the Fulford model of reality about how Fukushima occurred, immediately after Fukushima, President Obama announced that the United States would build 23 new Mark II and Mark III General Electric nuclear reactor stations, the kind that had just gone bluey in Fukushima. And, of course, immediately thereafter, we had the Calhoun nuclear disaster brewing. We had with the Calhoun nuclear station being flooded by the Missouri River kind of overflowing, Mississippi River overflowing its banks and so on. And then 10 days after the Fukushima disaster, Piñera, the president of Chile, and Obama signed an accord to build these two nuclear reactors in Patagonia. So it's as if Obama took the event of Fukushima as a signal to ramp up the nuclearization of the world, including the United States, which really doesn't need 23 new reactors.
Hey, you know, if Fukushima was going to destroy the Northern Hemisphere, it doesn't matter if we build more nuclear power plants. You know, we're all dead anyway.
Under Reagan, James Watt was the Secretary of the Interior.
Yes.
And James Watt was an apocalyptic Mormon who believed that the world was going to end, according to the predictions in his sacred texts, in 2 years anyway. So it didn't matter if we cut down everything and dug up everything and killed everything, because it was all going to be over in 2 years anyway. Very interesting perspective for a Secretary of the Interior.
The Walking Dead is the zeitgeist of the Northern Hemisphere. People aren't talking about it. They are the Walking Dead. They know they are on some level.
On some deep level. You know, yeah. Last Saturday, we were invited to a birthday party of a delightful guy here in Chile, bilingual, lived in the United States for many years, splendid guy. And his sister, whom we also know, invited us to drive about an hour and a half to her house and have lunch with him. And then we came back to Santiago that evening to go to a world music concert, which was really cool. Anyway, we were sitting there when a passel of teenage girls came rolling in, and they were all dressed in rags and tags, and they had fake blood all over their bodies. And this was the two daughters of the lady who invited us and two of her friends. And I said, when they left the room, what was that? And the mom said, oh, they just came back from Santiago, where they went to a zombie walk. I said, what's a zombie walk? And she said, they all dressed up like zombies, and there was some music, some zombie music, and they had a party in the street being zombies, being dead. I thought that was extraordinary.
It's not just in the North. This subconscious...
Can I?
Yeah. as Dr. Rima began this little section of the show, she
I really have got it. I've got a good zombie story, though.
Oh, go ahead. Do your zombie story.
A friend of mine was at a protest, a zombie protest, outside the parliament on Halloween. What do we want?
Brains.
When do we want it?
Brains.
Brains indeed. Yes, yes, the living dead need their brains. What I was going
to
say
And they had to leave Parliament because they couldn't find any.
They couldn't find any brains, yeah. They're in short supply.
You're going to starve if you need brains from Parliament, surely. So, Dr.
Can you imagine just zombies, like, dead from starvation, just lying around Parliament, you know? It'd be quite funny.
So she started by saying, well, you know, all you guys listening out there, and she was not referring to our wonderful guests and our wonderful listeners out there, but rather to the NSA and their New Zealand and Chilean and who knows, Chinese equivalents who are listening in. And she wrote her latest blog. If you go to DrRimaTruthReports.com and go on the blog, see the latest blog is entitled "Why I'm Not Afraid of NSA Snooping in the Social Media." And I guess, Dr. Rima, it's basically because all these years we've been wanting the government to pay attention, and now they have a whole huge bureaucracy to record our words and send them up the bureaucratic chain for us.
Yes, more people are reading us inside the government than ever before. Now, I have to presume that what you're saying, Vinny, and what we're saying, and what all the other truth tellers are saying is shaking the certainty and confidence of a certain number of people who are reading and listening to what we're saying. And that's very interesting. We were at the Monsanto March, and by the way, the police here, unless you're rioting and burning cars and stuff like that, the police are not aggressive. They do not use tasers and other aggressive weapons against people. It's a very, very different climate, partly because the police have not been privatized. They are not corporate employees. They are public employees. Makes a big difference because the accountability is to the people, not to a corporate CEO. Big difference. The police in the United States are being privatized and part of what's happening.
And
militarized, yes. So anyway, we were at the back end of the march against the Monsanto law that occurred a week and a half ago here. Lovely march, absolutely lovely. We've put up pictures on our Facebook pages and so on. And there were some cops hanging around at the rear end and following the end of the march. Very relaxed, no threat. And we said to them, "Do you know what this is all about?" And they said, "No, we just were told that, you know, we had to keep the march orderly." And we said, "Well, the march is orderly. This is about your family, your friends, your children, your survival, your being able to have more children." They said, "What?" And we started talking about what GMOs and industrial food mean to them. And we had a lovely dialogue. Now, I could only participate in a small part of it because, of course, not everybody who is a cop in Santiago speaks English, and my Spanish is pretty limited. But the people who were speaking Spanish to the cops were engaging them in a very human way. They were personalizing the dialogue. And none of these cops, there were women and men, none of them are going to think the same about this issue again. We gave them our action item link. They promised they would go to the site and take action and so on. And in that little interaction, and it was just a couple of minutes, we actually changed the balance of reality, you know, the tipping seesaw in the minds of two or three of these people who are then going to go home and think about this and share it with the people around them. This is a very important thing to do. You don't change a culture if you don't reach out to the individuals, which is what Nuri said, talk to the people everywhere. And so that's one of the things that you can do. I talk to people on subways and in offices and in restaurants. I talk all the time, and I give out the link, and I ask people to just find out more. And they do. They really, really do.
It's when you're contributing something positive to humanity that makes people stop and listen.
Absolutely. Vinny, how would you like to open up the phone lines so that people can call in and have the opportunity to talk to somebody who talks funny?
Hold on a second. Are you telling me to orchestrate an invitation to call into a radio show to talk to somebody who talks funny?
Yes. No, Vinny is a remarkable thinker and doer. And I'm inviting Richard to type out the phone number for us so that we can open up the lines. Richard, will you give us the phone number so I can read it? Okay. The Studio B number is 310-421-4053. I'll read that again. Studio B, which is our studio, is 310-421-4053. If you're on Skype, you can make a connection and a call to Freedom Screen 2. That's Freedom, S-C-R-E-E-N 2. And we'd love to talk to you. If you have a question, a thought, a comment, you know, with the wonders of internet, Vinny's show, The Lighter Side of Genocide, is available both in archive and live. No matter where you live, just as the Dr. Rima Truth Reports is available no matter where you live. So there's nothing to bar you from listening to Vinny and the remarkable show that he has and the guests that he brings on and his delicious, irreverent sense of outrage and fun. It's a unique mix.
Yeah, well, I think if you're going to be really angry about something, you better enjoy being angry if you have to do a lot of it.
If it's your job, you really ought to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's my job to be angry and happy at the same time.
You know, what do you do, Vinny, when people say, well, you know, it's not good to be angry. You shouldn't be angry. How do
Those
you respond
people
to that?
Are out of touch with freaking reality.
There
Are
you go.
Out of your mind. Are you telling me that somebody comes up, destroys your life, burns down your house, kills your child, and you think that being angry is an unhealthy response? You're out
you,
of
Ralph?
Your mind.
Yes. How about you, Ralph? What do you think? Is anger a healthy response?
I don't think so. I think it closes off our ability to be creative. And I think we need to be as creative as we possibly can if we're going to succeed. We've proven over and over again that pushback works.
No, I think you're confusing.
Change.
You're confusing fear and anger.
Oh, let's talk about
fear
that.
Fear shuts off your thinking process. Mm-hmm. Anger, I've come up with some of the most brilliant schemes when I'm angry trying to solve the problem.
Ralph, I have to agree with Vinny. I think anger is an appropriate reaction. I think anger is a healthy reaction when somebody's trying to kill you and the globalists want you dead. The globalists want you enslaved if you're useful to them or dead. If you're not, the globalists want your kids dead. They want to take over all your property, all your decisions. And I would say that not being angry is actually kind of not understanding the problem. But Vinny is quite right, I think. Fear paralyzes us. And if we feel powerless, then we feel fear.
That means you should never be afraid to be angry.
Yeah, right. For me, the issue is to take the energy of the anger, which I think is quite appropriate when somebody wants to kill and destroy everything that you hold dear, including your life and your family. I think anger is a pretty good sane response. The question is, do you mobilize the anger or do you simply allow yourself to become paralyzed by the fear that is often associated with powerlessness when you're angry? So I think anger is pretty useful.
Especially as a great motivator. I think somebody told me once that on a spectrum, anger is like depression, except it's got motivation, right? Depression shuts you down, turns you off, because it's based on fear. Anger turns you on and turns you up. That's that when you're functioning sometimes at your highest capacity is when the thing that you are fighting for is your very life. That is when all of your faculties come alive. Every part of the brain is exploding with ability so that it can protect you from something that is trying to kill you. This is when we're at our strongest. This is when we're at our least predictable. This is where we are at our most intimidating to the New World Order, who want to keep us all docile and uncaring, to tell us that, oh, having an anger issue, you know, that kind of thing. Dude, you tried to shoot me. You exterminated 100 million people. Of course I'm freaking angry. I'm going to bring you to justice with that anger.
You have poisoned my child with so many toxic injections, and now you want me to bear the brunt of your assault on my child as the parent of an autistic child, and you want me to accept it. I think that's worth being angry about. Ralph, I really would love, Vinny, you don't know Ralph as well as I do, and I know that he is a very thoughtful and intense.
Can I encapsulate this? We're talking about a scene in The Lord of the Rings. There's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for. Okay? That's basically it.
So Ralph is a freedom fighter and has been for his whole career. Ralph, I would love to get your thoughts on this discussion.
I'm listening and thinking. I think you are probably correct that righteous anger is a phrase that people used to use, is a catalyst to action. We know, of course, that all human action is predicated on dissatisfaction, and so it shouldn't surprise us that that people might get motivated by anger, because anger is a good example of being dissatisfied. So yeah, I can, from a philosophical basis, I can see what you're saying. And maybe until we open up the windows and scream out the window, I'm angry and I'm not going to take it anymore, maybe they'll expect us to take it. That's a very good point has been raised.
Well, precisely. And I do believe that if you don't have close attachments to things, and if you don't suffer, then you don't actually value these things that you have, and you often don't act to protect them, particularly if they've just been handed down to you your whole life. You don't really know what you're fighting for. All of our rights and liberties were granted to us more or less as hand-me-downs from previous generations umpteen years ago for dying in our stead so that we might be free. That's what I fight for. That's what I value.
What's happening with free speech in New Zealand / Australia?
You're not going to like this.
And why, by the way, does it seem that New Zealand and Australia, which are, after all, at least 1,000 miles apart, why do they seem to be grouped psychologically or emotionally or politically in some odd way when the two countries are really quite different?
Well, they're also quite looped geographically as well. If you're a Canadian or an American and you come to New Zealand or Australia, people will ask you if you're Canadian or American, because we honestly can't tell the difference, just like Americans and Canadians can't tell the difference between who's a New Zealander and who's an Australian. And Canadians get really pissed off when people call them American, and Americans get really pissed off when you call them Canadian, and New Zealanders get pissed off when you call them Australian, and Australians get pissed off when you call them New Zealanders. Yet, if a New Zealander and Australian meet together in Canada, they love each other like brothers. And if a Canadian and an American meet in Sydney, Australia, they love each other like their best friends and neighbors. It's a really messed up world we live in.
That's all true. That is absolutely true.
And
so,
these are four groups of people who have the same language traditions and, to a great extent, the same common law legal traditions. Imagine when the differences are broader than that. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
So what's the situation with freedom of speech?
Okay.
How free are you?
You say that fluoride is not good for you. You get editorials in the newspapers, full-page ads calling you an insane person. If you call out police brutality, you get arrested without warrant and held for a couple of days in a cell. You have all of your phone calls and emails and any other communications accessible without warrant by the Government Surveillance Bureau, or the GCSB, which has an office of the NSA in its very building. And also, if you receive mail or contents or anything participating in a crime in the future, they can actually charge you for receiving something in the future. And if that turns up, then they can arrest you. They can bust into your house.
I don't understand that one, Vinny. Tell me more.
Let's say they wanted to arrest you for something. So what they do is they charge you for stealing, for receiving stolen documents or whatever. Because let's say you're a journalist and they've got a source or something that they want to cover up. So if those documents turn up in your post office box, even though you didn't send them to yourself, they can arrest you. Okay.
This all sounds very much like the situation in the United States right now.
Yep, they can also come into your house and surveil you, set up cameras, microphones without a warrant for up to 3 days without a warrant. And if they don't find anything, they can just retrieve all their gear and everything and then take off and never even file a report that the surveillance ever happened at all.
And when they bust in your door, the first thing they do is shoot your dog. And if you're, and you should be thankful that they don't tase your grandmother.
Yeah, the people who are in uniforms are not themselves. You take that uniform off, you're looking at a completely different person, and you view them very differently. They view themselves very differently when they're wearing that uniform. And what people don't realize is that those people in uniform that are supposed to be your authority figures are not the ones that are actually there to help you. They're the ones that are there to keep you in line so that you don't upset the current established order that gives them their frickin' paycheck, because they're not people. You know, well, I mean, sorry, they are people, of course. They're just not there to serve the people. They're there to serve the corporation that owns all of you, that owns all your birth certificates. There ain't nothing for free, okay? You don't get protection for free. If you want to protect yourself, there are concealed carry permits, which some countries have, that has had great effect in reducing the amount of school shootings, hold-ups, rapes, violent crimes, and things of this nature. It just never gets reported. Because if 9 people get shot to death in a New York gun ban zone Wendy's, everybody hears about it on every network. But if 2 gunmen get a gun pulled on them by a 20-year retired sheriff with a concealed carry permit who holds them until the police turn up and we're about to assassinate about 16 people in a big grocery store or whatever, that gets it on local network, but that's about it. You know? There's no reason for them to report to you, to give you hope. They want to demonize everybody taking care of themselves. We've got massive disinformation campaigns towards they're really, really difficult to get a gun in New Zealand at all. And there's such restrictive laws that in order to own any firearm at all, you have to, by law, have an entire safe in your house somewhere that is bolted to the wall and floor. So that rules out a lot of people who are in rental accommodation from owning any kind of firearms, including those that are in high crime neighborhoods, which would actually very much benefit, statistically speaking, from access to a firearm for the purposes of self-defense against home invasion, muggings, and the like. Because as soon as you pull out a weapon, even if your assailant is armed too, they tend to run away and you never even have to discharge the firearm, because who wants to get shot over stealing what they know that you've probably only got $50 tops in your wallet?
Interesting.
Do you have a weapon, Vinny?
No. I'm 6 foot four. Nobody messes with me.
All right. So I guess the Second Amendment in the United States does have some slight impact because it is much easier to own a gun in the USA. And in the past several years, there's been an enormous increase in gun ownership and in ammunition holding. Of course, the American government has purchased huge amounts of ammunition also, almost as though people are maneuvering and setting themselves up for the next round.
Yeah, five rounds to be precise. Five hollow point rounds for every man, woman, and child. That sounds exactly like a thinking of a machine to me.
Mm-hmm. My favorite piece of that whole reality is that the Social Security Administration has some enormous number, hundreds of millions of rounds. And I figure what they're going to do is when some grandpa becomes irate because his Social Security Part B was increased and he comes to the Social Security office and says, I don't understand this and I'm not happy with the fact that my check was lower this month than it was the last month, they're just going to blow him away with a hollow point bullet to his chest, and that should limit protest and questioning in the future.
If anybody asks a question, just shoot him with a hollow point in the chest.
Exactly.
Oh, I love diplomacy. It's so civilized.
We joke about it, but there was an instance, a famous instance in Nazi Germany, where one day the SS went into the German Foreign Office building, Foreign Office Ministry, and went around and shot non-Nazi diplomats at their desks, dozens of them. Governments do behave this way.
Well, statistically speaking, you're more likely to be killed by your government than any other factor.
Right. Especially government-controlled healthcare.
Actually, that's the second leading cause of death, not including all of the accidents. That's just the properly prescribed medication. So if you include all the other stuff that really fracks up, then yeah, it's probably the number one plus with a lot of gap in between that and anything else. But this is all part of the world that we live in. Now, you've heard of the holographic universe, the fractal, how everything is a repeated pattern of everything else. What I've found is that this exists also in the paradigm of conspiracy research, and I've called it fractal scumbaggery. Much like a fractal, you will look into one particular instance of scumbaggery or one particular scumbag, and then you will look and you will see that pattern repeat itself over and over. And to each little vein of scumbaggery that opens up, you can look even further into that and see that even more scumbaggery. And it's an infinite scumbaggery network that is completely and utterly infecting everybody, right? We're all living in it.
I think
some are doing what we can to fight it. But,
I think that's a brilliant insight, Vinny. It's really quite extraordinary. So the scumbaggery, as you call it, which is a wonderful phrase, the scumbaggery repeats and iterates and iterates and iterates and iterates as you go deeper and deeper or larger and larger in the corruption. I would say that's absolutely true. That certainly echoes my understanding, although I never put it in exactly those terms. Good for you. That's iterative scumbaggery.
Fractal scumbaggery.
Fractal scumbaggery. Absolutely.
We have about 15 minutes left in the program. I know there had been some discussion of inviting comments from the audience. I don't know where that went. I think we sort of...
Richard, do you have... you're monitoring the chat for us. Do you have some comments or questions that the chatters would like to have us address? Okay.
Nothing. You got nada. Well, apparently people are not interested in teasing for the funny accent.
No, apparently not. Perhaps they are so besotted with the exquisite exoticness of that accent that they can barely think.
Only do people say that I have the funny accent, there's a lot of the girls as well that say it's a very sexy accent.
Well, I hadn't thought of it that way, but I suppose it is. Ralph, do you find it a sexy accent?
That's a yes.
Hey, we love the accents of. I was just thinking, if New Zealand had 300 million English-speaking people in it, and North America had 5 million, we'd be the guys with the crazy accent. That's all.
Absolutely, no doubt. And there still is some regional accent capacity in the United States. There are recognizable local accents, and I think that's wonderful.
It's great. There's so much diversity. Like even in New Zealand, like you have the far north New Zealand, it's like, oh, bro, how's it going, man? You know. Then there's the Auckland accent. It's like, yeah, bro, how's it going, man? And then you have the South Island, was like, yeah, bro, how's it going, man? You know, it's like the laziest accent of the country. The further south you go, the jaw moves less, you know. And more of the rolling of the R's, whereas you would say rural New Zealand, they would pronounce a rural New Zealand.
Really? I didn't know that. I've never been to New Zealand. I've never had a chance to experience all that diversity of language. That's fascinating. I didn't know that.
And often among men, there will be a persistent usage of the word bro.
Huh.
Almost punctuating nearly every other sentence. Oh, bro, this, bro, that. You know what I'm saying, bro?
Really? Yeah. That's fascinating.
Especially if you're from far north.
Say again? I didn't hear that last thing.
Especially far north of New Zealand. Very common trait. It's quite fun, actually. Guys from the far north are good people. And that's another thing that's very interesting. We talk about psychopaths a lot. And in fact, I just came off an interview with Chris Duane from Silver Bullet, Silver Shield. And we had a good hour and a half discussion about psychopathy and our own experiences and the identification mechanisms that you need. And what we've concluded is everybody, by and large, is actually a very good, decent person who's perfectly okay to hang out with. But it's only this very small minority of specific individuals that comprise that psychopathic mentality or propensity to allow themselves to be, shall we say, put under its spell. And it takes sometimes a very long list of victims to be racked up before one person stands up. And then after that one person stands up, all the rest of the victims then start to be emboldened and start standing up as well. And that is the two things that psychopaths truly fear. One is even worse psychopaths than them, and two is being exposed. And I think that it is the duty of anybody who has the strength of character and the true grit to see it through to the end, to expose the psychopaths that run our society. You want to know why society is crazy? Because psychopaths love power and control, and they weasel their way into the media, entertainment businesses, politics, every industry you could think of, law, medicine, religion. They're all there waiting to lavish up the power and control so that they can destroy everything that they touch.
You know, one of the most interesting books I ever read was probably the hardest to read because of the convoluted Germanic very, 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 very long, complex sentence structure that every sentence had. It was a book called Ponerology, the science of evil. It showed up in my mailbox with an address from Kamloops, British Columbia, and I had never heard of the person who had sent it to me. I didn't know what ponerology was. I'd never heard the word. And I was interested enough to start reading it. And then I became utterly fascinated, despite the absolutely turgid style, because it had been written in Russian and translated to Czech and then translated to German and then translated to English and so on. Long, complicated history as to how the book ultimately got written and published. Well, I contacted the person who had sent it to me, and they said, I don't know you, and I didn't send you a book. I don't know what you're talking about. So I don't know where the book came from and why it wound up in my inbox, in my mailbox. But what I learned from it was that, and I should have known this in a political sense, but I didn't. I only knew it in a psychiatric sense before I read the book, is that the reason psychopaths are so successful at seizing control of everything that they decide to seize control of is that we ordinary people are completely blind to the existence of psychopaths. We don't see them because we don't have the capacity.
There we are, Dr. Rima. We've reached the end of another Dr. Rima Truth Report.
Absolutely. I guess Vinnie Eastwood, The Lighter Side of Genocide, Ralph Fusitola, and I wish you a good week. Stay healthy, stay free.
And we'll see you all next Thursday night, folks. Thank you.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.